Veras B'nai Torah presents The Shmooze, an engaging and motivating Mussar and Hashkafa series that deals with real-life issues.
The Gemara Brachos Daf Samach Aleph Amud Beis says, Tana Rabbanan, the Braisa teaches us, Pamachas Gazra Malchus Arasha, one time the evil empire, which refers to the Roman Empire, decreed Shelo Yasku Yisrael B'Torah, the Jewish nation should not be involved in Torah study. This is already after the destruction of the Beis HaMikdash. The Romans are occupying the land of Eretz Yisrael, and they are in charge. And they made a decree that one is not allowed to learn Torah. And certainly when they made these decrees, they were quite serious. And the implications and the results of one who violated these decrees were rather drastic. Bar Pappas ben Yehuda, a certain gentleman by the name of Pappas ben Yehuda, came a matzal Rabbi Akiva, found Rabbi Akiva, shemakil kehilas barabim. He found that Rabbi Akiva had gathered together huge crowds of people, v'osik b'Torah, and Rabbi Akiva was teaching them publicly Torah. Amalei, he said to him, Akiva, iatam isherei b'nei malchus, aren't you afraid of the monarchy? Amalo, Rabbi Kiva said, Em shalachal mashal, I'll give you the mashal. And this is the famous mashal amad davadomer. What is this comparable to? To a fox. One day there was a fox who was walking on the edge of the river, and he saw that fish were gathering together, running from place to place. The fox said to the fish, Mipnei ma'atem borchim, why are you running away? They said back, Mipnei rishosos, because of the nets that the people set for us. They set these nets and they tried to capture us. The fox then said to the fish, would you like to come up to the dry land? Let us live together, and that way you can be safe from the nets. The fish said back to the fox, you are the one who they say is the wisest of the animals. Lo pikeachata, you're not a wise animal. Elatipeshata, you're foolish. And the fish said, because in a place that we live, a place that gives us sustenance, we're afraid. Surely in a place, the dry land where we have no water, surely so much more so should we be afraid. And Rabbi Akiva said, that is the mashal. We, the Jewish nation, who are being involved, sitting and learning Torah, the Torah says, Ki uchayecha v'orach yamecha, this is the length of your life, it guarantees you life. And despite the fact that we learn Torah, we're still afraid. Surely if we stop learning Torah, how much more so we have to be afraid. Therefore, said Rabbi Akiva, I will continue teaching Torah publicly. Omru, they say, Lohayu yomi mo'otim, it was not a very long time, achetofsel Rabbi Akiva, before they captured Rabbi Akiva, v'chavsu b'beis asurim, and they locked him up in prison. But they also captured Pappas ben Yehuda, the same gentleman who had this conversation with Rabbi Akiva, v'chavsu etzlo, and they locked him in the same prison cell. Amalo Pappas, mi aviecha lakane, Rabbi Akiva said to Pappas, who brought you here? Papa said, Ashrecha Rabbi Akiva, praise are you, Rabbi Akiva, that you got caught for teaching Torah. Oilo lepapas, woe is to papas, shenitfas al divarim betelem, I got caught for foolhardiness, for emptiness. And then the Gemara goes on to tell us, B'shar she'atziu es Rabbi Akiva, at the time that they took out Rabbi Akiva to be executed, it was a time for Kriya Shema, it was morning time, and he had not yet read Kriya Shema. V'yosorkin es besaro, they would flay his flesh with combs of iron, literally peeling his flesh off of his bones. And he was saying Shema, he was being makabel o malchu shemayim, he was accepting the yoke of heaven in that state of torture. His students were gathered, this was a public execution. Rabbi Akiva was one of the greatest men of his generation, one of the leaders of his generation, and everyone knew about this because this was an attempt on the Roman Empire's part to squash any resistance, and this was a highly political murder. Rabbi Akiva was there, gathered with hundreds, if not thousands, of people, and his students were there watching, and as he's being tortured, his skin being peeled off his body, he's saying Shema, almost seemingly oblivious to the pain. Amr al-Tamid of his students said, Rabbeinu Ad Khan, is it possible for a human being to withstand that torture and still have in mind saying Shema, having in mind accepting the fear of heaven? Amalehem, Rabbi Akiva said, Kol yom ha'yitzi mitztar al ha'pasuk, all of my days I worried about this, I had pain about this pasuk. It says, b'chol nafshecha, you should love Hashem with all of your soul, being willing to give up your life. And I said, masa yavol yada, when will I be able to fulfill this? Now I have the chance to fill it, should I not do it? The Gemara goes on, Hayamaruch be'echad, he lengthened the word echad, and at the conclusion of the word Echad, his neshama left him. At that point, a bas kol came out, a heavenly voice came out and said, Ashrecha Rabbi Akiva, praised are you Rabbi Akiva, Shiyotza Neshmasecha Be'echad, that your neshama left with Echad. And the Gemara tells us that Hashem himself said, Rabbi Akiva, Atam Zuman L'chayam Abba, you Rabbi Akiva are prepared for Olam Haba, no judgment, no din, you go into right into Olam Haba. This is the event that is very familiar to us all. And I think there's just one question that I would like to focus on. And that question is, listen to the words that Rabbi Akiva says. Kol yomai hayisi mitzar, all of my days I had pain on this pasuk, b'chol nafshecha, with all of my heart. Now we say these words twice a day in Shema. We say, v'ahavta es Hashem lekecha, Hashem, I love you. A Jew is obligated to say, Hashem, I love you with all of my heart. B'chol nafshecha, I'm prepared and willing to give up my life to sanctify your name. But Rabbi Akiva did not say that I wanted to, did not say I was willing. Kol yomai hayisi mitzar, all of my days I had pain. I had pain, I said, when will I get to fulfill this? When will I get to die al kiddush Hashem? And that's an astounding thing for a man to say. Not just that he's willing, but he literally had pain that he felt, oh yeah, I haven't been able to do this. I've not been able to accomplish this. I've not been able to do this. And I want to focus for just a moment on a truism that's said in the world. They often say that it is easier to die for your God than it is to live for your God. And that concept basically means if you're a Palestinian who's being used as a political pawn and you have no future, you have no life, you have no hope, there's no ambition because you're brought up in a very, very limited world and there's no way out, then it is very easy to understand how you can sell a person on the dream. All you have to do is give up your life that stinks anyway, and you'll gain heaven, it'll be wonderful, it'll be great. But that's not what Rabbi Akiva was experiencing. Rabbi Akiva was not just a great man. Rabbi Akiva was the leader of his generation. Rabbi Akiva had 24,000 students. Rabbi Akiva was the man who led, literally, the entire Jewish nation. He was a man who had the ultimate life. And for such a man to say not just that I was willing, but that I actually had pain. I had pain, I said, when will I get to sacrifice my life to show Hashem how much I love Him? But he didn't say it once. Kol yomai, all of my days I said this. And the question is, how is it possible that a human being can reach such a level that he could literally feel pain over this, and that it could stay for so many long years? And I'd like to see if we can address that question this evening. And let me preface it with an observation that the Chovas Levavos shares with us. He says as follows, at the corner, the cornerstone, the basis of one's avodas Hashem, the whole basis of one's service to Hashem should be a sense of appreciation of Hakaras HaTov. Recognizing all of the good that God has done for me, recognizing all of the good that God has bestowed upon me, that sense of appreciation should well up in my heart and cause me to wish to serve my Creator. And there's only one little problem with that concept. And that is that in accordance to the good that I'm given is the debt. So, if I had a grand life, if my life was great, it was astounding, it was unbelievable, then I owe Hashem greatly, measure for measure. If my life is just okay, then whatever, you know, I don't owe Hashem that much. And if my life is pretty lousy, then I don't owe Hashem very much at all. I'm afraid that for many people, if you'd ask them in a moment of honesty, if you'd ask them to be really candid with you, how's life? Life is okay, all right. And if life is okay, all right, then in truth you don't really owe Hashem that much. And this firepower, this sense of appreciation, that overwhelming sense of I owe Hashem for what He's given me should be lacking because my life is not really that great. And I think that that concept is at the basis of a lot of people's issue of properly serving Hashem. And I want to share with you an interesting observation. For almost 5,000 years, man's life was basically set. The type of home you would be brought up in, and the type of home that you would bring up your children in, the type of village that you lived in, the type of work was basically set. You were brought up in a very limited circumstance. You knew basically that your father had a particular trade. That's a trade you went into. Your father lived in a particular village. That's the village you lived in. Who you were to marry was set. The type of children you would raise would be set. And how you'd bring your children up largely was set. There was a great order and predictability to life. And with the advent of the 20th and certainly with the 21st century, much of that has changed. There is such a social mobility and there's such a tremendous movement. Mankind now has tremendous freedom. I have freedom to choose the city I'll live in, freedom to choose what I'll do for a living, freedom to choose the type of life that I will live. And in one sense, that sounds like a wonderful opportunity to create my life. And in truth, it is. It is a tremendous opportunity, but that freedom also comes at an interesting cost. Viktor Frankl, who's been quoted before in the Shmooze, wrote a book called Man in Search of Meaning. He was a Viennese psychiatrist who reopened his practice in the Upper East Side after living through Auschwitz. And he describes an interesting thing. He says that because man no longer has tradition and social expectations that guide him, he finds himself rudderless. Oftentimes, he finds himself floating, not knowing what to do, not knowing what's expected of him, not even knowing what he wants. And he coined a phrase, amazingly, he coined a phrase that he calls Sunday neurosis. Because when he opened his practice up in the Upper East Side, and he found people coming to him with symptoms that he had never experienced before the war, he realized he was dealing with a whole new set of circumstances. And what he found was that many, many people would be busy during the week, busy at work, busy with life, doing things, and then would come the weekend. Would come Friday night, Saturday, Sunday. The busyness stopped, and people found that they were empty, meaningless, valueless, and he claims that he found an increase in suicide. He claimed that not a small amount of suicides were based on the fact that the busyness stopped, the activity stopped, people got a chance to think, and they would say to themselves, what's the purpose of it? What's it all about? What am I living for? What's the purpose of my life? And then, according to him, they would find themselves empty, find a roof, and jump. But what's amazing is he opened his practice in a very exclusive part of the town, Upper East Side. The people that were coming to him were highly successful. These were people who were on the top of their game financially, in terms of career. And he describes that people would come in and they'd say, Doc, I'm depressed. Is it your marriage? No, my marriage is fine. Your kids? No, family's fine. Your career? No, I'm on top of my game. My company's expanding. So what is it? I don't know, Doc. I just wake up in the morning feeling empty. And his conclusion is that you could have tremendous financial success, tremendous success socially, but if you don't have a purpose, if you don't have a meaning, if you don't know what you're living for, what are you doing it all for, you will be depressed. Because his conclusion, man without purpose, man without direction, without a reason to live, will be depressed. And again, that's logotherapy. His entire school of therapy is based on the concept of finding meaning, finding purpose. And there's much basis to it. However, Viktor Frankl went off a little bit. If you read the book, you'll see that any purpose, any reason to live is okay. If you want and it means something to you, live it and it's okay. But I want you to hear what I'm saying now. Can you imagine for a minute a person who really comes to grips, comes to a real honest assessment of why he was put on this planet? She reaches a core understanding of why God created me, what my purpose is, and with that understanding gets out of bed in the morning with a mission, and with that mission lives their life. Could you imagine a person going through his life with a drive and a tremendous sense of understanding, not just why I was created, what the perfection of my essence is, and what I need to do to reach that? The reality is that every human being was created for a purpose. Every human being has a goal. Every human being has a tachlis. And most of the planet runs around without a clue to what they're doing here. Most of the planet runs around without a clue to even knowing that there is a question to be asked and that there is an answer. Hence, I believe that Viktor Frankl is right. He says that in his studies, 60% of college students that he taught felt that their life was meaningless, purposeless. They didn't have a why that they were living for. Hence, he claims they should, by all rights, be depressed, and in fact, oftentimes were. But imagine the opposite. Imagine a person who has a very clear understanding of exactly what he's doing here, exactly why he's here, and with that passion, gets out of bed in the morning, every morning. Well, my friends, that is a person called Rabbi Akiva. You see, here's a man who understood exactly what he was on the planet for, and he understood the value of every word of Torah, every action he did, and he valued his time infinitely because he understood why God created him. He understood what perfection was about, and he valued every moment of his life because it offered him a chance to grow, to accomplish, to fulfill his purpose in being. And he understood that it was shaping the essence of him for eternity. And that was day in, day out, every moment of his life. It's very interesting. The Chofetz Chaim began the yeshiva in Radin. And he brought in, to be the yeshiva, he brought in the Granat. And the Granat, after a number of years, became ill. And it wasn't clear that he was going to make it. And the students in the yeshiva began a collection. But they weren't collecting money. They went around collecting time. Who would donate time for the Rosh Hashiva to live? And some of the Bokhrim donated days, some donated weeks. There were a few who even donated a year of their life. And when they were done their collection, they came to the Chofetz Chaim and said, Rebbe, would the Chofetz Chaim like to add to the collection? And the Chofetz Chaim heard what they did, and he said, yes, I too will give time to the Granat. I'll give 1 minute. And the Bokhrim came, Rebbe, 1 minute? The Chofetz Chaim said, yes. If you truly understood what a human being could accomplish in 1 minute of time, I doubt you'd be so flippant and donate weeks and months and years. I'll donate 1 minute. And these Bachrim say that night, Seder was the greatest asmada. They learned with the greatest diligence because the Chofetz Chaim taught them a lesson. What a human being can accomplish with a minute of time. And my friends, that is a man called Rabbi Akiva. Every minute of his life, precious, every moment of his life, an opportunity to grow, to accomplish, to reach who he's supposed to be for eternity. And with that passion, he gets out of bed and lives his life. Could you imagine a man with such a love of life, such a drive? Well, with that sense of life and loving life comes a sense of deep rooted hakaras hatov. This life was given to me by my Creator. This life, which is wonderful, which is grand, this chance to grow, to accomplish, was handed to me. I don't have the wisdom to make my arms. I don't have the wisdom to knit the neurons in my brain. This was given to me by my Creator. And with that love of life, there was also a sense of deeply rooted appreciation. And the more Rabbi Akiva loved life, the more he loved Hashem because of it. And with that deep, deep rooted sense of appreciation was also a sense of, wow, Hashem, what could I ever do to pay you back? Hashem, I love you. Hashem, I'm infinitely grateful. And I'm willing and wishing to give my life to show how much I'm dedicated to your cause. And it wasn't once, but day after day, he says about himself, I felt pain. I felt pain all of my days. When will I get to show Hashem truly how much I love him? And I believe that is exactly what Rabbi Akiva was experiencing when they took him out. When he said to his Talmidim, this is not something I haven't thought about. All of my days I wished to show Hashem how much I loved Hashem, because this man had a true love of life, and with that true love of life came a true appreciation and a true love of Hashem. But there's another step here. It wasn't once. It wasn't for 2 days. It wasn't for a week. Kol yomai. All of my days I said, when will I get to give my life up for Hashem? And if you think about it, I think that's very unusual. You see, Rabbi Akiva had a dream. His dream was to be able to show Hashem how much I love you. To be able to say to Hashem, there's nothing that I wouldn't do for you. There's nothing that's too great. I'd give up my life willingly. But that was a dream that he had. But that was a dream that he had day after day, week after month, month after month, that he could not fulfill. You see, it's usur, it is forbidden for a Jew to willingly give up his life. And Rabbi Akiva was bound by halacha not to do it. And typically, what happens to a person who has a dream and he can't fulfill the dream, that dream starts to fade away, starts to be forgotten, and becomes obliterated. And as a matter of fact, the Chovos Levavos explains what happens to people with dreams. We've all had dreams at some point in our life. If you think back when you were younger, or maybe you are young, and you realize that there are things that you aspire to be. You want to be a particular type of person. You want to be a particular type of father or mother. You want to be a particular type of husband or wife. You dream of being the type of person that people say, wow, that's an ish emes, that's an honest human being. That's an erlich human being. That's a balmidos. And says the Chovos Levavos, we all have had those dreams, and a very interesting thing happens. There's a pathology, there's a disease state that happens to the dream. When we're young, we dream big visions, big dreams. I'm going to accomplish, I'm going to do things, I'm going to be this great individual. But then life starts setting in, and the dream is not so easily attained. And the first step in the process of the disease state of the dream is the person starts making excuses. Listen, in this generation, and how many people are really, really honest in business, and what could you really expect of me? After my first million, then I'll start being straight and honest again. Says the Chovos Levavos, that's the first step in the disease process, the excuse step. And after that, there's another stage. The next stage is the dream becomes something that I look down upon. That dream of being honest and ethical, the dream of being a walking Kiddush Hashem, is no longer something that so fits me. It doesn't suit me so well. I don't really view that as such a grand accomplishment. And I start to be mezalzel. I start almost mocking the dream. And that which I once upon a time viewed as great, I start getting this sort of cynical sort of, I don't know, that's only for really frumaks. That's only for really idealistic people, maybe yeshiva bochrim. But in the real world, you can't live that way. That's a second stage of the disease state, when you start mocking it. The third state is you leave the dream altogether. And the fourth state is you forget the dream ever happened. It's as if it's a different human being. You find yourself 10 years later, 20 years later, you look yourself in the mirror. Not only don't you recognize yourself as that same person 20 years ago, you've totally forgotten the dream. It's nelam, it's obliterated, it's no longer there. But that's not something that Rabbi Akiva did. He wasn't able to fulfill it, but he kept dreaming, kept waiting. All of my days I waited. When could I fulfill this? And this took years, literally years and years. He kept that dream vibrant. He kept it fresh. He kept it in his mind's eye. And he said, when will I get to that stage? He didn't become cynical. Didn't make excuses. Said, I can't do it now, but that's who I wish to be. That's my dream. And that, my friends, is a very, very great yesod for accomplishing what we put on this planet for. Because Hashem put in, within the capacity of every human being, an ability, a desire, and a wish for dreams, big dreams. And every person has had a dream, maybe even now has a dream, and that dream is to be very different than I am now. But that's a healthy state. You see, if a person can have that dream and say, right now I'm here, but I dream of being that individual, and a person's able to keep that state and keep that image in his mind, that's a very healthy state. Why? Because that gives a person drive, that gives them energy, and that allows a person to one day reach it without becoming cynical, without making excuses, saying to myself, I am not there now, but that is my dream, to be this type of human being. And I want to share with you something very interesting. In 1894, Marconi was 20 years old. And he began toying with a rather novel idea. He believed that he could broadcast through ether. He could broadcast radio signals through thin air. And everyone knew that he was wrong. But not only did everyone know that he was wrong, when he first began developing his equipment, his father came and smashed it, because he said this is the product of an idle and wasteful mind, and he was called insane. And he rebuilt the equipment, and his father smashed it again, and he rebuilt it again, and his father again smashed it. And he recognized that if he was to do what he set out to do, he'd have to buy himself at least one friend. So he worked on his father, and after a year and a half, he proved to his father that he could, in fact, broadcast from a mile and a half distance, and his father was sold on the idea. He then went to the Italian government where he was living, and they wanted to commit him to an insane asylum. And certainly nobody would fund him. So he decided, okay, Italy's not the place. He packed up his gear, got on a boat. He ended up, after a while, in England. And when he entered the port, customs asked him, what do you have in there? He described its instrumentation to broadcast over thin air. They confiscated it and destroyed it because they knew he was a bomb maker. He was committed to an asylum, according to some reports, but certainly assumed to be insane. This is the man who invented modern radio. This is the man who came up with the concept of standing in one place and broadcasting out for miles and miles and miles. The radio industry, eventually television, ultimately much of modern technology came about because of this man's dream. Something that at the time he was called insane about, that his own father worked against him. And I think there's a lesson to be learned there in one level, just seeing people who have had dreams, people who have very far out dreams are able to actually carry them out. But I think there's a much bigger lesson to learn from Marconi, and I'll share with you what that is. The Gemara Makkah says something amazing. The Gemara Makkah says, "Bederech she'adam rotze leilech," in the path that a person wishes to go, molichin oso, they guide him. But the Marsha makes an observation. Wait a minute, listen to the language. In the path that a person chooses, the path that a person sets his life upon, molichin oso, they guide him, says the Marsha. What do you mean they? Who's the they? You mean Hashem? You mean Hashem helps him? The Marsha says there's no word Hashem in that expression. Says the Marsha, actually it's not Hashem. Says the Marsha, and listen to these words, he says. What the Gemara means when it says that b'derech she'adam rotze leilech molichin oso, on the path that a person chooses to go, they take him, says the Marsha, kol machshava dibur u'maisa, every thought, expression, and action of a person, bori lo malach, creates a spiritual entity, a malach lefi inyono, in accordance to that thought, im letov, im lera, for the good or for the bad. When a human being thinks a thought, when a human being speaks an expression, when a human being does an action that creates a malach, creates an angel, creates a spiritual force, and it's that, says the Marsha, that are molichin oso. You see, if you've thought that thought often enough, you've created enough spiritual energy, you've created enough malachim, that they are the ones that escort you down that path. You ever notice that somehow it is that people end up exactly where they plan to be? Oftentimes, not what they've expressed, but somehow what they've always wanted to be. Says the Marsha, that's actually not just a happenstance. There's actually a spiritual entity. There's a malach created every time a person thinks, every time a person makes an expression, every time a person does a maisa, that creates a malach, and that force brings him. And would you like to know why Marconi is very relevant? Because when Marconi got up there and told the then scientific community of a time, I can broadcast from 18 miles off of shore, I'm going to send Morse codes, no one believed him. But when he broadcast the races from 18 miles offshore, the scientific community opened their mouth agape, and he convinced them. You don't see it, it passes through thin air, but it exists. And the Marsha is telling us that there are spiritual entities very much like that. When a person has a dream, when a person thinks about something, certainly when a person expresses it, it creates a spiritual energy, it creates a malach, it creates a force that aids that person down that path. And my friends, that is a very key point. Because if you've ever had a dream, and you think the dream, and you think about it, and think about it, and think about it, it will be much easier for you to accomplish that. Now the world understands that as visualization. The world understands that because if you set yourself as a goal, you're going to be motivated, you're going to be driven. That's correct. But there's a whole other piece to the puzzle. When you think that thought, you're creating a force in the world. You're creating a malach, you're creating a spiritual energy, shemolichin oso, that brings you down that path for the good or for the bad. You ever find somehow it is that the guy who somehow doesn't want to make it in learning doesn't? Despite the fact that he says he's trying real hard, but you see, he's called out of the Beis Medrash, he's called out of Yeshiva for whatever the reason. My friends, that's exactly what the Mashal is telling us, a tremendous yesod. If a person has a dream, it motivates him, it drives him, but there's a whole other piece to the puzzle, there's a whole other part to it, there's a spiritual force that's created every time a person dreams a dream, and that brings a person to great, great heights if his dreams are proper. And now I want to share with you something. I had the displeasure recently to read a book by Napoleon Hill called Think and Grow Rich. Now you note that sometimes I quote secular books and the Shmuz, and this particular book bothered me like a thorn, and I'll tell you why. He does a very good job in the outset of this book quoting about 25 great human beings. And he has an impressive array of people that he personally interviewed, people of accomplishments, people who have done great things. And then he begins to weave his plot. But his plot is very thin. You see, you can take all of the wisdom and you could earn money. You could take all the accomplishments and use it to earn masses of fortune. You could take everything that they've done and make yourself rich. And as you read the book, you recognize that the greatest good that he's extolling, take all the wisdom of the ages, and what you could accomplish with that is you can make yourself wealthy, as if that is the sole accomplishment of man, as if that is the great thing that human beings live for. And to be honest with you, after about maybe 60, 80 pages, I closed the book. I had to, because it's just too distasteful. And the reason why I share that with you is because I would like to offer that it is a very healthy, very good experience for a human being to close his or her eyes and dream. But the problem is, typically when you tell especially young men to dream, what they dream about is money. Oh, you mean dream? Oh, millions, millions and millions. I'm going to be so rich. It's unbelievable. So what I'd like to do is I'd like to ask you to dream, but don't dream about money. Don't dream about riches. Don't dream about fortunes. Dream a dream, likely a dream that you've thought about earlier in your life, maybe a current dream, and dream big. Now, the dreams are individual. For one person, it may be to be a Talmud Chacham. For one person, it may be to open a stuck organization. For one person, it may have a dream to make 10 people from. By the way, in our day and age, it's not that hard. You may say, I'm not a Kiruv professional. How am I going to make 10 people from? You'd be friendly with enough people in your office. You'd be, just try it enough. You'll find that you're able to help people, influence people. But I'm not here to tell you what your dream is or what your dream should be. I'm here to tell you to dream a dream. But dream a dream that's big. Dream a dream that has real meaning. And amazingly, if you dream it enough and you think about it enough, you'll find that likely you'll have either a full ability to fulfill it, a partial ability to fulfill it, but it won't be for naught. And it won't be for naught because that's what Hashem wants from a human being. You see, Rabbi Akiva had a dream. And it was that dream, I believe, that helped him fulfill it. And it was Kol Yomai, day after day, week after week, that he dreamt this dream. And this dream, because he dreamt it, helped him fulfill it. And at the end of his days, he was ushered right into the Gan Eden. He was ushered in without din, without judgment. And I think there's a tremendous lesson to learn from Rabbi Akiva. And the first lesson is, if you see a human being who says these words, Hashem, what could I ever do to repay you? Hashem, I love you so much, there's nothing that I wouldn't do. I'm willing to give up my life. You have to ask yourself, what could bring a person to that sense of appreciation? The answer is that person loved life. But how could a person have such a love of life? The answer is because that person has a mission, that person has a purpose, that person knows why he or she is on the planet. And because of that, they get up in the morning with a drive, with an ambition, because they value every moment of their life, because they understand they're put on this planet to grow, to perfect themselves. Hence, every moment is precious. Hence, the Chafetz Chaim could say, 1 minute. I'll give 1 minute, because he understood the value of a minute. When a person has that value of time, it's only because they have a real sense of purpose, sense of mission, and that sense of purpose and mission gives them a love of life. They love living, and with that love of life comes an appreciation. Hashem, you gave me this life. This great opportunity to exist, to grow, to accomplish was handed to me by my Creator. Hashem, I love you for it. What could I ever pay you back? How could I ever repay you for this? And that's Rabbi Akiva, who's willing to give up his life. But the chiddush is that that dream that he had didn't die. Day after day, week after week, he kept it vibrant, he kept it fresh. It was right there. When can I reach it? I can't do it. It's forbidden. I can't cross that border. But one day, that's one of the great secrets to accomplishing things in life. Having a dream and keeping that dream fresh, not getting cynical, not distancing yourself from that dream, not saying that that dream is a different state, I'm in a different stage in life, keeping that dream fresh, brushing off the dust, and saying, when will I be that person who I dreamt about? And if you need a little freshening up of the dream, look into your children's eyes. And ask yourself this question, what do I want my child to think about me? What do I want my grandchildren to think about me? And if you need a little bit of dreaming, that'll help you. Because everyone's had that dream of being that father, that mother, that Zaidi, who the children respect and understand who they are. And that dream, whatever your dream is something you have to use and utilize. Use it motivationally, use it behaviorally, use the spiritual power of it. Because every time you dream it, every time you think about it, every time you speak about it, it adds more force, more malachim, more spiritual energy, until eventually a person can hopefully reach that dream. And again, that's what Rabbi Akiva did. I want to close with an interesting dream. 2.5 years ago, I was invited to say a shmooze in Brooklyn, and there were 12 guys at the shmooze. That was week one. Week two, there were 12 guys at the shmooze, and I was pretty impressed. I knew it would last about 3, maybe 4 weeks, and it'd be over. Great attempt, great idea, but it wouldn't last. The shmooze somehow lasted. We are now up to shmooze 100. Out of the shmooze came an organization called Tiferes Bnei Torah. Tiferes Bnei Torah is a very, very interesting organization. And just to give you an illustration of what this organization has become, about 1 year ago, Rabbi Zev Davidowitz is talking to me, and he says, you know something? We're growing, we're expanding. Do you know, I'll bet you, he says, if we do this right, 4 or 5 years from now, you're going to have the opportunity to speak at the Aguda convention. And he was dead wrong. Because six months to the date after he said that to me, the Aguda called me up and invited me to speak at the convention. And I said, what do you want me to speak about? They said, whatever you want. Now that's not too smart. You remember Schaefer, the floor, without an agenda, just speak about whatever, how long you want me to speak, however much you need. You sure? Yeah, we're sure. Okay. Not only did they give me the floor, there came out a tremendous, there's an article in the Jewish Observer, which you may have gotten a chance to see. Right now, we have 3 full-fledged branches. There are over 400, maybe 500 people who are involved in one level or another in our organization. There's talk, very serious talk, Mr. Shem, of another branch opening up in the 5 towns. There have been calls from Chicago, from LA, from Florida. And believe it or not, there is a dream. And now, you ever hear the expression, the snare maker gets caught in his own snare? You see, along with this dream comes some financial expenses. So about 3 months ago, I began working on the financial plan, and I recognized that there is none. Okay, good way to run an organization. And I said, we got to do something about this. So I came up with a plan to raise basically a budget of somewhere around $300,000. And I'm speaking to someone, and I told him my goals, my ambitions, my dreams. He says, that's okay. Just tell me, where's the $10 billion plan? I said, what? He said, the $10 million plan. I said, what do you mean? He said, that's not a plan. Give me a $10 million plan and I'll help you sell it. The snare maker got caught in his own snare because he had a point. And that point is, you have to dream. You have to dream big. My friends, there are. I did the demographics once. I mentioned the earlier shmooze. Our demographics are young people, working people. Would you like to know that in the New York tri-state area alone, there are about 100,000 people who meet our demographics? And by all rights, we should have a $10 million budget, but certainly many, many groups, many, many branches, much happening. And that's a dream. How far we'll get, I don't know. But that is a dream, and it is well worth dreaming. And my friends, my message to you is dream those dreams. Each individual is put on this planet for a great, great purpose. But you have to dream that dream. You have to reach inside your essence and say to yourself, why did Hashem create me? What am I doing here? What's my purpose? What's my plan? You see, if you take those key critical steps, you'll change your life radically. Number one, you'll have a much, much better olam hazeh. You'll have a much better time living. Because you may just discover a purpose, a plan, a reason. A human being with a plan, a human being with purpose is a human being empowered, driven with ambition. That human being is living. And everyone else that you meet on the planet is basically going through the motions. And the difference between a human being going through the motions and a human being with ambition, with drive, empowered, is impossible to compare. Likely, if you take those key critical steps of asking yourselves, what am I here for? What's my plan? What's my purpose? You likely will find it. And when you find it and you dream the dreams, what will happen is a number of things. You'll wake up with a whole lot more zest. You'll wake up with a whole lot more energy. But likely you'll accomplish it. Maybe not all of it, but a lot of it. Because ultimately that's what Hashem created us for. Hashem created us to be great. Hashem created us to grow. Hashem created us to dream the dreams. And when you do it, it's not just that you're more motivated. It's not just you live life. You get help. You have malachim. You have spiritual forces that guide you, that help you. And ultimately you live a very different life. May HaKadosh Baruch Hu help us that the next 100 shmuzim should have more power and impact than the first 100. May HaKadosh Baruch Hu grant us that more and more people should be involved. And may we join together for the next Simcha in Yerushalayim HaBanuya. Thank you.
You've been listening to The Shmooze, presented by Teferis B'nai Torah. For more information on The Shmooze, please visit us at www.theshmooze.com, where you can download all the Shmoozin free of charge, as well as view source sheets and address questions or comments on this or any other Shmooze. The Shmooze is completely funded by private donations. We need your help to continue our work. All donations are tax deductible and count as miser. Please help us help others by calling 866-613-TORAH. That's 866-613-TORAH. Or you can make your donation right on the web at www.theshmooze.com.